You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show podcast. Hear the Robin Lundberg Show weekdays from 4 to 6 a.m. on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM and ESPNNewYork.com.
You don't know. Track your...
Will not lose ever.
1-2. He loops that to left field. Going to be a tough play. Jeter on the run. Makes the play. Wow. And flies into the stands. Oh, what a play by Derek Jeter.
Be ready to enjoy everything. You know, I think he deserves it. I think he has earned it. So, I mean, all he has to do is just enjoy it.
That highlight you heard Michael Kay do for Derek Jeter diving into the stands, I was actually at that game. And today... have to humble brag, you know, or something. Today we have to decide what is a greater force. I mean, this is a tough question. It's a tough question. It is a dilemma. What is a greater force? A more powerful force, I suppose. Derek Jeter's greatness or the New York Knicks' terribleness? Because the Knicks just find out different ways to lose. It's sad and it's painful and it's all the different adjectives you can throw out there. And at this point, I kind of think that they may need Carmelo Anthony to walk in order to save them from themselves. That's the way I'm starting to lean. You know, Mike Woodson's job status is going to be in peril today, as it's been in peril all season, and deservedly so. I think the only play on his clipboard is a bunch of arrows pointing to Carmelo Anthony, as you saw, as was evidenced by the end of last night's game. Melo missing down the stretch, put in a bad situation. Again, he's now 0-for-12. The last two seasons with 10 seconds or less when trailing by one possession or tied. So, a dilemma. What's the more powerful force? Derek Jeter's greatness or the Knicks' terribleness? But the story of yesterday, of course, was Jeter taking to Facebook and announcing that he will retire at the end of the year. And that led to what normally happens in those situations. You know, the love fest. The much-deserved love fest. Where people are going to say... you know, Derek Jeter is their favorite player. Derek Jeter's the greatest they've ever seen. Whatever it may be. I've never seen someone get the level of admiration that Jeter has. I mean, Jeter means something special to people, to a lot of people. The dude is referred to as the captain by grown men. But, like, more than one. It's not like I know one person who does that. You know, Ryan Rucco does it a lot. I used to kid him about it when we did a show together. Of course, you can catch Ryan with Stephen A. in the afternoons. But the captain. You hear it all the time. Everyone says it. I mean, that shows a level of reverence. Derek Jeter is more than, you know, a great player. He's an icon. He's an icon. And when that happens, the narrative starts to go out about him. But people lose sight sometimes, I think, of how good a player Derek Jeter is and was. I guess, you know, emphasis on was, but let's be nice to him today. It's his, you know, going out party. How great a player Derek Jeter is. You know, Jeter is so often credited for his intangibles, but his tangibles put him right in the Hall of Fame. You know, not a second delay. Forget intangibles. Derek Jeter's tangibles put him right in the Hall of Fame immediately. Probably the best offensive shortstop for sure of this era. And in a era filled with PEDs and all these guys putting up the enhanced numbers, Jeter's stand out even more. I mean, here's what you need to know about Derek Jeter and what people think of him. If it were to ever come out, and I hope, please, no one takes this statement out of context, because I am in no way making any sort of accusation. I'm just saying, if it were to ever come out that Derek Jeter used his PEDs, like if I feel like I would fall into the earth. That's what would happen. The reaction would change the axis of the planet. People would sob so much that everything would change. You know, Jeter, he's done so much in a sense where you can only judge him on his on-the-field play, and that's where the reverence comes from, I believe. You know, Jeter always seems to conduct himself like a professional. You get the sense that he is a leader on the field. He has, I wouldn't say risen to the occasion in the biggest moments. If you look at Jeter's playoff stats versus his regular season stats, they're the same. And that's kind of what it takes to come through in those spots. You don't diminish. You're able to be your all-star Hall of Fame caliber self under the spotlight and in the biggest moments. Because think about Jeter for a second. Think about what you actually know about Derek Jeter. Oh, he's a great guy. Oh, what a great guy. I love him. Do we really know that? I mean, there's no reason not to know that, not to think that. Let me put it that way. Because he's never given you a reason not to think that. I mean, Derek Jeter doesn't share anything. He doesn't share anything. He's a guy who is so private, you really know nothing about his private life. It's all speculation, like gift bags and the like. And even when he's commenting in his public life, I mean, he did it in a Facebook message. He didn't get behind a microphone or anything like that. But even when he's publicly commenting, Jeter doesn't say much. I mean, some people have actually criticized him for that. But what happens when you maintain a private life and you don't say anything controversial publicly? How are people supposed to judge you? The only way they can judge you at that point is by what you do on the field. And what Derek Jeter did on the field is exemplary. For a certain generation of fans, he is it. He's the guy. You know, there are a bunch of people probably really sad today. And I bet Jeter, he could feel the knock on his body, I'm sure. He could probably sense it was time. And I don't blame him. You know, if I was Derek Jeter and I saw the thing with Mariano Rivera a year ago, I'd be like, yeah, that looks pretty good. That looks pretty darn good. But everyone is going to wax poetic about Derek Jeter, and if you'd like to do that, you have the chance. You have the forum. That's fine. And he certainly deserves it. He certainly deserves it. Like I said, on tangibles, he's a Hall of Famer. Forgetting the intangibles. Forgetting being the captain and everything that's gone along with it. But with Derek Jeter announcing his retirement, I started to wonder something. You know, aren't the Yankees running out of farewell tours? Running out of retirement ceremonies? That was last year. Mariano Rivera's retirement tour was the story of last season. This season, now almost assuredly, it will be Derek Jeter's farewell tour. And it's the end of the core four. And the Yankees get criticized a lot for their spending and how much money they've spent at various times, and they are the team that buys championships. But if you look at it, as much of an advantage that their dollars were, it could easily be argued, and it probably is true, the bigger advantage was having guys like Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Jorge Posada and Andy Pettit and Bernie Williams. That was probably the biggest advantage. But after this season, they're all gone. They're all gone. So I think Derek Jeter's retirement is about more than just the fact that he's going to have a farewell tour and everyone is going to, rightfully so, point out their favorite moments and discuss where he ranks. I mean, he's like a cartoon at times, right? I mean, the 3,000th hit, you just have to laugh when something like that happens. It's so, you know, it feels scripted, but it's not. And that's going to happen, and he deserves that. He's going to get that farewell tour. He's going to get a farewell year. But for me, the question is, beyond this season, what does the absence of Derek Jeter mean? Not just for the New York Yankees, but for baseball. I'll tell you what I'm talking about next. Robin Lundberg Show, ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show podcast. Hear the Robin Lundberg Show weekdays from 4 to 6 a.m. on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM and ESPNNewYork.com.
At shortstop, number two, Derek Jeter, number two.
A very iconic introduction for Derek Jeter, and I'm sure it'll be an iconic farewell for Derek Jeter as well. And today we are pitting two very powerful forces against one another. What is the more powerful force? Derek Jeter's greatness or the Knicks' terribleness? Tweet in at me at Robin Lundberg, R-O-B-I-N-L-U-N-D-B-E-R-G. Frank PO3 tweets in the Knicks' terribleness easily. At the sports bar, sacrilege, even putting the two in the same sentence or thought process. Keenan R&B says it's close. I mean, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, close. And finally, A to the J tweets in, Jeter, he will be great forever, whereas the Knicks will not be terrible forever. Are you sure about that? I mean, I'll get to the Knicks in just a little bit and how they might avoid being terrible forever, though I am very much not optimistic. But with Derek Jeter, as I was just saying, you know, all of the accolades, all of the superlatives are deserved. He's earned them on the field. He has kept his life private, which makes you judge him by what he does on the field. But to me, rather than, you know, joining the waxing poetic discussion and just saying, oh, Derek Jeter is the best, I mean, that's coming. He's going to get that all year. What it really brings to mind is a question. What's next? What's next? Who is the next face of the New York Yankees? How does the allure of the Yankees continue on? And this is not just the Yankees issue. This is a baseball issue. I honestly believe that Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez are the two most famous baseball players. That's a problem. That's a problem considering A-Rod is disgraced and Jeter is on his way out. You know, Mike Trout is a great young star. Yasiel Puig generated a lot of headlines. Maybe they can step up. Maybe they can fill a void at some point across the sport. But it is a sport lacking star power. But let's stay with the Yankees. Let's focus on the Yankees for a second. Who's the next face of the Yankees? No, who carries on the allure for the Yankees? 1-800-919-3776, 1-800-919-3776. I mean, it's not going to be Kelly Johnson. That's for sure. This was a team that saw its ratings and its attendance go down like never before a year ago. Jeter was out all year, essentially, right? I mean, weren't some of the biggest stories when Jeter might come back? Who's it going to be? What's the draw? You had Mariano Rivera's farewell tour last year. You'll have Jeter's farewell tour this year, but then it's farewell to farewell tours. You're all out of them. You know, Mark Teixeira is a good player near the end. CC Sabathia has lost the velocity on his fastball as well as, like, it seems like 200 pounds. Looking gaunt. But a pitcher's only every five games or whatever anyway, and he's not in his prime. Tanaka could draw a whole different, you know, culture and demographic in. But I don't see, I mean, Cano's gone. He was never the guy anyway people like to maintain, even though he was one of the five best players in baseball. If one of the five best players in baseball wasn't going to be the answer, who is going to be the answer? What's next after Jeter? What's life like after Jeter? Who's the next face of the Yankees? Baseball. Who keeps that allure going? Adam in the CVS. Adam, you're on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.
Hey, how are you doing, Robin?
What's up, Adam?
Skyman, I'm so sad today, and I am kind of happy to. Let me first preface my statement by saying that, you know, I want to apologize to anyone that I may offend because I am the biggest Derek Jeter fan. He has been my icon and my hero. I don't look up to any celebrity, any athlete. Derek Jeter is my man. When I was six years old, he entered the Yankee roster in '96, and people used to call me Jeter. They say he used to look like him. You know, he had that, like, that baby face. He was, you know, young.
So you do all right with the ladies then, Adam, that come into the CVS?
maybe.
You're handing out a lot of prescriptions,
definitely,
huh?
Definitely not Derek Jeter status.
But, no, well, now that Derek Jeter's retiring, he's going to have a lot of time to date.
Yeah, you know, he's got so much time, Robin. I'm so sad, but I just want to say that this man, he has meant so much to baseball. It's not even funny. What Derek Jeter is to baseball is what Michael Jordan is to basketball, is what Gretzky is to hockey, and is what David Beckham is to soccer. And I think you might be able to leave it at that. He is phenomenal. He's a five-time.
So what you're saying, Adam, is that you are a fan of Derek Jeter. Is that what you're saying?
I think everyone
just kidding,
should
man.
Be a fan of Derek Jeter. You know, I you know, and like I said, I'm just throbbing. I'm literally in tears. I never thought this day would come. I swear, and yeah, I'm a fanatic. I'll admit that and all that. I truly felt in my heart that he would play till maybe 60 years old, because if I could say this...
You know, Adam, why don't you get in touch with RJ. I'm going to hang up now, but you get in touch with RJ. Give him your address, and I'll send you a consolation packet. I'll send you a Jeter a gift bag. No, I'm not really. I'm just kidding. In case, you know, he's taking that literally. But Sheckstar tweets in, Derek Jeter can never be replaced. Feels like a piece of my life is going away. I don't have an emotional attachment to Derek Jeter, but I get it. You know, a lot of people grew up and they saw that team have so much success. And when you see your team have success, it just makes it so much better. It makes your life better, right? Makes your life better. When you were a Yankees fan in the late 90s and the early 2000s, your life was better. Just like if you're a Knicks fan from the 2000s on, your life is worse. Tommy in Queens. Hey, Tommy. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Robin.
How are you, man?
You know, when Rucco was reading that yesterday, I started choking up because I seen Jeter play his first hit in 95. I seen him win the Rookie of the Year in 96. I was only 12. I'm 31. Me and you were close in age, I believe. You know, I was only 12 when he came up. So, and you know, I started really getting baseball like 92, 93, and then when 96 came around, I'm like, okay, I was a Yankee fan, you know, my family, you know, and I tell people, you know, to the older people, the older generation, he's my Mickey Mantle, because when he got up at bat, you just felt, okay, you know, bases loaded, two outs, yeah, we're gonna win this game, and you know, you don't feel like that, and you know what, he cannot be replaced. He cannot. There's no possible way. It can't be Mark Teixeira.
Well, I mean, you're that's the question, Tommy. It's like you're saying he's your Mickey Mantle. Who's the next guy? Are they going to have a real struggle with that? Because, you know, they did struggle with interest last year. Who would have thought that would happen to the Yankees, you know, the biggest brand there is? You know, Jeter was not alone on those teams as a guy who you trusted to come through. I mean, it's probably a good question whether you trusted Bernie Williams or Derek Jeter to come through more back in those times. You know, and Pettit was always a guy people always relied on in bigger spots. You know, that goes down the line. Rivera, of course. I mean, those guys are all gone. Who's going to be the next face of the Yankees? Who's going to be the next face of baseball? I think that's a real legitimate issue. 1-800-919-3776 at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. Graphics Joker tweets in, now that the most overrated player in all of sports has retired, who will replace him? You know, somebody who's going to wisecrack about it. They always get their pot shots in. He must be a Mets fan. Mets fans do whatever they can to, like, discredit Derek Jeter. It's one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen. Like, I observed it in my time here in New York. I've been in the city, you know, 10 years now. Yeah, 10 years. And it's just hilarious. Like, they'll if Derek Jeter was on the Royals, nobody would... You know, if Derek Jeter was on the Royals, he'd be going to the Hall of Fame. I got news for anybody who doesn't believe that. Would he be the star he is? Probably not. I mean, he was lucky to wind up in the Yankees organization. But they did a good job in getting a lot of those people. Where are they now? Who are the next guys? That's a real question. Tyler in Los Angeles. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, it's definitely got to be Tanaka. There's no way that you can come over and sign that big of a contract from Japan and not going to be able to become the face of a franchise. Because to me, signing that big of a contract and the way he did his press conference, to me, he said, I'm going to be the face of this franchise.
Yes, but, I mean, he has to come through and perform in that level, Tyler. I mean, one thing, I always think it's hard for a pitcher to do it because they are only there every five starts. Matt Harvey might have been on his way there for the Mets, because he was a power pitcher, he blew people away, and the Mets were so starved for a player like that. But I think it's always difficult for a pitcher to do that. And there are a few other, you know, obstacles for Tanaka. I mean, he's going to have the audience, the Japanese audience, which is going to be huge. But there is also a language barrier. You know, and it's Hideki Matsui, of course, adored by the Yankees fans. And if Tanaka performs, he'll be adored by the Yankees fans. But there can sometimes be, you know, a little bit of a lack of the oomph across the star base when that person is not also in the commercials and that sort of deal. I'm sure they'll figure out ways to get that done. But first thing he's got to take care of is on-the-field performance. I'm sure, you know, there's going to be a lot of buzz around Tanaka's first starts, and there are going to be, you know, more than buzz around him if he goes 24-0 like he did in the Japanese leagues. But that remains to be seen. I'm not going into this season thinking, well, Tanaka is definitely the next face of the Yankees. There's not enough proof of that there. Kevin in Harlem. Kevin, you're on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.
Here's what I'm saying, right? Loving the show, loving the show. Loved the show for a long time. I never even chose to call the show. Like, I just normally just enjoy it, you know?
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that.
Sure, it's Gavin, actually.
Oh, Gavin. Well, let me get your name right. Thank you, Gavin. I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Here's what I'm saying, though, man. Like, we cannot even get into a conversation about what happened after the Yankees if Mr. Jeter is going to be like, yo, I'm going to retire. Like, if a person like Mr. Jeter is like, yo, I'm going to retire, like, I'm actually, as a Yankee fan, thinking he might just decide he's just going to have another championship, because he's the kind of person that decides to have championships. Like, I don't know if you know what it is that Derek Jeter is.
Well, you know what, like Gavin, I'm sorry. It still says Kevin on my screen. Derek Jeter, I don't think he's the kind of guy who just decides to have championships, but I think his career makes you think that because they've won so much.
No.
Yeah, Gavin, no one just decides to have championships. Like, fans
no
have this...
I don't mean like he just decides. Like,
well, like, fans have this, like... It's this ability to think guys will things to happen. You know, they go back and rewrite history. Like, with Michael Jordan, he never missed a...
I remember when I realized who Derek Jeter was, it was an Orioles game. I don't remember the year. I think it was sometime around, like, 98, 99. I remember, like, I was in Brooklyn, like, somewhere in Canarsie, and my grandparents put me onto, like, the Yankees and Derek Jeter. And I remember there was a play where your man literally ran from out of the screen and just literally came and caught the ball and just made the play.
Gavin, you're making my point for me. I understand. He was an unbelievably great player. Unbelievably great player. I'm in no way disputing that. I just said on his tangibles, he's walking into the Hall of Fame. But with guys like Jeter who do a lot of winning, who represent something for a generation, you go back and you sit your grandkid on your lap and you're like, did you ever know about Derek Jeter? Derek Jeter once ran from the outfield and dove before he even got to second base all the way into the stands to save a ball. He caught it in his hat, flipped it behind his back, still got the guy out, and the next at bat he hit a grand slam without anyone even reaching base before him. You know, I mean, that sort of stuff starts to happen. And that speaks to what he meant to a lot of people. Robin Lundberg Show, ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show podcast. Hear the Robin Lundberg Show weekdays from 4 to 6 a.m. on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM and ESPNNewYork.com.
Real Radio Go tweets in, Jeter over the Knicks because the Knicks can't win anything, even a contest about how stinky they are. You know, that's me asking what is a greater force, a more powerful force, Derek Jeter's greatness or the Knicks' terribleness. You can weigh in on Twitter at Robin Lundberg, R-O-B-I-N-L-U-N-D-B-E-R-G. Of course, Derek Jeter's greatness being the topic du jour yesterday with his Facebook announcement. Justin Coe tweets in, I think this day, or I knew this day would come, but I never wanted to accept the reality. Derek Jeter, a true sports icon. People are really broken up. I mean, that shows you what he meant to them and how he's a part of your life. It's like, you know, you go through stages, and every generation has their guy. You ever notice that with every sports argument you have? You have an argument with your dad. He's always going to stick by the people that were and he followed during his formative years. So he would be like my dad, you know, Jim Brown. And later on, various guys in the NBA, he would argue more for the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlains of the world. And I know there's a gap there, but you know what I'm saying. And then younger kids are going to say LeBron. And 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds are going to say Jordan. For what age group? RJ, what age group would you say Derek Jeter is just going to resonate so much with? I mean, he's going to touch the older fan, don't get me wrong. But there is a fan out there. There's like a perfect age right now. A fan who was, say, 12 when the Jeter-Yankees run started and is how old now?
Derek Jeter is the reason probably people 30 and under are Yankee fans. And if he's not the reason, he is, boy, he's a large part of it.
Well, I think the winning is the like anytime a team is winning all the time and constantly competing for the World Series, but then you throw in a guy who has the star power. And I think that's the reason I'm asking the question, the legitimate issue right now is who is next? You know, who's the new face of the Yankees? Who keeps that allure going? Who's the next guy who's going to don the pinstripes and be that star for baseball at 1-800-919-3776? Because don't you agree that's a legitimate quandary? I mean, who's there?
Before this core four and Jeter and those guys came along, and I think that's why he gets so much credit, and deservedly so, they were bad for a while. That's before a lot of people's lifetimes, but they had some rough, rough years, a couple of decades of bad baseball, and then they come surging back, and he's the guy that's identifiable with it. He was there the longest. He's the guy.
So he's an everyday player, too.
Yes, that's true.
You know, he's the kind of guy who's gallivanting along and has all the rumors with the starlets and stuff like that, the commercials.
He lives the life I wish I lived.
Yeah, and a lot of people will say that. Adrian in Long Island. Adrian, you're on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.
Hey, good morning, Robin. Good morning, guys. Yeah, definitely a different era in baseball. It's kind of like when Jordan, you know, when the Bulls won the championship and Jordan retired, it's like, what's next in basketball? And it wasn't much later on, except for maybe Kobe and Shaq. But, yeah, definitely a new era in baseball for sure. I have two quick questions, really. One real quick question. Do you think it's fair to say Teixeira might be the captain of the Yankees this coming season, especially if he plays well?
Well, I mean, we're still another year away. Adrian, I mean, won't Jeter be the captain this year? Maybe they won't even go with a captain in Jeter's honor for a year after that. Whether someone's the captain, I don't think is that important. You know, I don't think that the captain of a team is that important. I think it became an important moniker because of who was the Yankees' captain. I mean, the reason people reference and revere Derek Jeter as the captain is because of what Derek Jeter did on the field. Not so much, I think, what being the captain of a team instills.
Fair enough. Second question, really quickly. It was a bad mistake getting rid of Cano, and I don't mean to take this moment away from Jeter, but bad move getting rid of Cano. I think it was another bad move getting rid of Grandison. I mean, I know he had two broken hands and he had a bad season, but the year before, the guy had like almost 40 more runs with a healthy Grandison and a healthy Teixeira and, you know, a new lineup. Don't you think it might have compensated for losing Cano?
Well, you know, Grandison is not around, and he, you know, he's striking out all the time anyway. Would it have compensated? Perhaps. I think they filled that spot fine. I don't necessarily agree with letting Cano go either. Look, maybe the Yankees knew something we don't. Maybe, you know, they just valued the financial part of it and the luxury tax, and it finances other teams. That argument is certainly understandable. But as a fan in a non-salary cap league, I just want my team to spend and spend and spend and spend. I don't care if it funds other teams because I would just want to have a super team. I don't care how much it costs because really that stuff doesn't reflect in your ticket prices as much as you think. And also, if you're winning, if they're going on deep playoff runs, it makes up for it. So I think people are glossing over the loss of Cano. I think that's the best way to put it. They're just glossing, oh, yeah, Cano's gone, no big deal. Really? Really? I mean, he makes every single team better. But okay. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stuart?
Morning, Robin. How are you?
How are you, man?
Well, I knew this day would come. And let's just say this much. He's meant so much to baseball. You don't have to know about someone's personal life. And he was a perfect example of keeping his personal life out of the limelight. And the way he played the game, 100% all the time, busting it down the line. I wish Robinson Cano would have taken some of Derek Jeter's hustle and put it into his own game. Although Robinson Cano is a great player, but, you know, it's a, Derek. Derek was meant to be the captain for the way he carried himself off, on and off the field, the way he always deflected attention to himself by just saying nothing, and you never got anything really meaningful when you discussed him, but he did it in such an eloquent way that nobody really took offense to anything he ever said.
Well, and, he was able to answer questions without saying anything. He mastered that.
Exactly, Robin. And also another thing, it's like he had that smile, and in a way, he reminded me of another Yankee great. Mantle, the way Mantle smiled. Oh, Mantle was always hard. Derek wasn't. But Derek just carried himself in a way that, you know, he you know, he carried himself in a way that he was, you know, proud to be a Yankee, and the Yankees were proud to have him.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, and Derek Jeter's meant so much to so many people, and on top of it, the performance is there. I mean, just listen to you guys. Listen to you guys. It's going to be hard to replace no matter who it would be. Dan Dinkins tweets in, Jeter's next venture should be to open a PR firm because his off-the-field persona, no one has done it better. You know, the thing about his off-the-field persona is we know nothing. That's the magic of it. Know nothing about Jeter off the field. I mean, his teammates will always say everything about him on the field and whatever he provided, not just from a playing standpoint, but from the intangibles standpoint, something Mariano Rivera said he knew early.
All alone, I mean, since I saw it for the first time, I knew that Derek was special, even though, you know, he was making all those errors, but he was getting better. He was getting better and better and better, so you knew that you got something special on him.
Team Money tweets in, Derek Jeter, he's our Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, Lou Gehrig was in the ballpark for his 2,722nd hits and 3,000th home run. I mean, the 3,000th thing was hilarious. It was comical. It was so, you know, what's the description they use? Jeterian? It was so Jeterian. It's crazy. Todd Kramer, I missed Jeter's 2002 ALCS Game 3 play in Oakland because I was stuck in traffic on the Bay Bridge. Turned around, Jeter memory. Dave Mejias, 973, said, I'd say a good age group is between 18 and 30 for Jeter. I'm 25, and I remember everything. But going back to your question about the new face, what about McCann? It would take some years. He's an excellent catcher. He's young. He's not good enough. Brian McCann's not a good enough player to be and by the way, if you want to capture a new generation, McCann does not have the right attitude for that. He's the fun police out there. I mean, I got angry at Brian McCann last year when he was on the Braves. For that stuff. There's nothing worse than that. Nothing. Get that nonsense going. You can't look at your home runner. I'm going to punch you. Or, you know, that whole attitude out of there. I'm going to block the plate because I'm so tough. I hate that. Baseball needs so much less of that, not more of that. Oh, they need more of the, you know, the fun. It's okay, you know, so people don't think it's boring. Rather than I am, you know, protecting the morals and the unwritten rules of the sacred game. James in Queens. What's up, James?
Hey, Robin. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself? My main point is the Yankees don't have a key superstar coming up. Not only that, but there's no free agents coming up in 2015 or 2016 that make a big splash. There's no Robert Cano coming up. They lost their chance losing Robert Cano to Seattle. And now it's going to become a huge problem for them. And possibly the Mets might take over the town for a short time, but the Yankees always come back.
Well, the thing about the Mets taking over the town, they would need the success to do so. I think it's an issue for the sport, a lack of star power, not just the Yankees. I mean, if the Yankees aren't able to do it, then they have trouble. If the Yankees aren't able to generate the buzz, then there's an issue. I've often said that the Yankees are the engine that drives baseball. They're like what Tiger Woods is to golf. You know, everyone has their regional teams. Baseball's an increasingly regional sport because you need a rooting interest to watch it. And if you're a Cubs fan, you'll watch the Cubs until they're in it or out. And if you're, you know, whatever team, attach the team to it. The Dodgers were a little bit of a national story last year. The Yankees and the Red Sox are generally the national story. And the Red Sox and Yankees kind of need each other, but I think the Yankees are needed more so than Boston is. They're the ones that key that because people feel a certain way about the Yankees. They like to root against them or root for them. They have the biggest fan base and the most haters. But if the Yankees are vanilla, if the Yankees are bland, that's a real, real issue. Abby in the Bronx. What's up, Abby?
What's going on, buddy? I've been hearing a lot of sad calls lately. I just feel that it's bittersweet, you know. What happened, though, when Jordan retired, it was sad. You know, when all these great players retire, I'd rather Jeter go out the way he's going out. Because the way Jordan went out and the way Posada went out and some other football and athletes, you know, it's just sad when they're limping away. Even though Jeter's going to be, you know, he's going to be walking away, but you know he's all banged up. But you know what? It's a perfect time for him to do it.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I'll let them retire, Abby, whenever they choose. It's not my call. You know, I'm not going to tell somebody when to do it, but as a fan or an observer, there's nothing sadder than seeing someone who is like overwhelmingly and transparently great, not transcendently great, not look that way, you know? Just have their slow, sad decline.
It is heartbreaking. You being a big NBA guy, how old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay, so you saw when Jordan retired. Did that break your heart?
I saw Jordan in a Wizards jersey. You know, I saw that. You know, did it break my heart? I wouldn't say it broke my heart because I'm, you know, a fan of the sport, and that's a sport that I think, you know, they always are going to churn out stars. There's guys around the corner, but Jordan leaving did have an effect. Shaq and Kobe was there for a while, and then they had the issue with Iverson being the face of the league. You know, I loved watching Iverson play, but that wasn't exactly the best PR thing for the NBA for a while. But, you know, then came LeBron and the next generation of guys. I'm just wondering who that's going to be for baseball, if that exists. And if it can't exist for the Yankees, then there are some real big issues. Here on the Robin Lundberg Show, ESPN New York, 98.7 FM. Speaking of some real big issues, the Knicks have some real big issues. You know, that's why I was starting the show asking, what is a more powerful force, Derek Jeter's greatness or the Knicks' terribleness? As Dancy Stevie Dance tweets in, Dance Stevie Dance, the Knicks' ineptitude is more impressive. Jeter has more than two times the rings the Knicks have in 65-plus years. Ouch, that hurt to type. And the Knicks are nowhere close to getting back to the level of competing for a ring. In fact, they are likely not going to make the playoffs this year. They are likely worse than the Charlotte Bobcats. And my big fear for the Knicks is that they are headed down for more of the same. That they are just headed down a path of disaster again. That they're going to try the same thing over and over again, despite it not working. I mean, if anything, the end of last night's game was kind of a metaphor for that. Because they tried the same things at the end of games over and over again. It's infuriating. It's infuriating. You know, Carmelo Anthony missing at the buzzer as they go to overtime. Everyone knew what was coming. Everyone. I mean, every single fan knew what was coming. So you have to imagine the Sacramento Kings knew what was coming. They're going to clear out for Melo and give him the ball. It is like Mike Woodson's clipboard has a whole bunch of arrows pointing to Carmelo Anthony, and that's the only thing. It makes them so easy to guard. Makes them so easy to guard. Frustrating. Because all you have to do is run some sort of different action. Run Carmelo off a double screen. Set something up with him in the middle of the floor. Or how about this? Let someone else take the shot. As a decoy. Pass Carmelo the ball. Have somebody cut baseline. These things are possible. There is not a rule. It is not in Carmelo's contract that he must take every shot the last 5 minutes of the game every time, no matter what. You know, I wonder how much is Mike Woodson, how much is what Carmelo Anthony wants to do. Clearly, it's what Woodson is drawing up. Is it what Carmelo wants too? It's crazy. It never works. If you could take, let's say the clutch time, I promise you, I can look up the stats. You don't even need to hear them. You could take the last 5 minutes of a five-point game, the NBA-defined clutch time stats, and extrapolate them over a season. The Knicks would be losing games by an average of like 125 to 30. They can't score. They're so easy to stop. Carmelo's now 0 for his last 12. In the last two seasons, with 10 seconds or less, when trailing by a possession or tied. Did you see the shot he got? It's probably one of the reasons why, you know, it just kind of summed up their season perfectly, losing at home to the Kings.
Late in the game, we turned the ball over. I had some turnovers. You know, like I said, missed some shots. Just some missed opportunities that we didn't get done, that I didn't get done. So I'll take that one.
You know, Carmelo's going to say he'll take the blame for everything that went along. Mike Woodson's the guy who's going to take the blame. And trust me, he deserves a ton of it. It's not like he deserves none of it. a big share of it. Mike Woodson has done an awful job this year. You know, Carmelo had to talk about that, as he has to probably like every game now.
I'm not thinking about that at this point. That's been an ongoing issue, ongoing story. Every day is a new story, so he's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
That's what we deal with. He's still here. That's what we're dealing with. A ringing endorsement from Melo. He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with. Coach Woody. That should be like, you know, in his Wikipedia page, the top of Mike Woodson's Wikipedia page. He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with. Come on, man. RJ, you're laughing. Get on the mic. Say something. I need you to share your thoughts.
I've never heard a player say that about a coach. And we heard it a little bit before the show, but it's still funny. It's one of those things you keep playing. It'll be funny from now until the end of time.
Turn that into a drop for me. I need the end of this.
I'm not thinking about that at this point. That's been an ongoing issue, ongoing story. Every day is a new story. So he's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, Mike Woodson, is he going to get fired? I don't know. Mark Stein is reporting that Jim Dolan doesn't want to fire him. Does it solve anything immediately to put an interim coach in? Probably not. The rotations might get better. Woodson has entered total excuse mode. Like last night, he made an excuse that Shumpert had to leave the game so he couldn't go small, when all year he's been trying to play big, and now he's saying he couldn't go small because of this reason. He's in self-preservation mode. And the worst thing you can be is in self-preservation mode, usually. I've noticed from being around enough situations, whether professionally or a friend of mine describing their professional situation, or even with sports and some of the teams I've been around, when someone is in self-preservation mode, they don't do a good job. Because every decision they make is about saving their job, not doing the best job. You know, if you're trying to do the best job, you think innovatively. You think progressively. You look ahead. You plan. When you are trying to preserve your job, you're just, I don't want to get in trouble. What do I do to make sure I'm not in trouble? How do I put the blame on someone else? And what happens when you put the blame on someone else and scatter the blame around everywhere? Those people start to get affected. Those people are like, hey, why is he acting like this? What's the issue here? And you've reached that status with Mike Woodson and the Knicks, so that's not good. Mike Woodson is going to be the former head coach of the New York Knicks. I mean, everybody's the former head coach of a team at some point. But it is either some point in this season or right after the season. Because this is just such a disaster of a year. It's incredible. It's startling. I mean, what do you think the chances are that they make the playoffs even? And if they make the playoffs, does that mean anything? It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't even matter. I mean, the Nets tried to help them out by beating the Bobcats last night. The Nets are still playing pretty well. Nets win tonight. They're only a game under 500 after all that. And they're virtually tied for the sixth slot. They might move out of that dreaded seventh or eighth seed. The Knicks are 2.5 games behind the Bobcats. They're 20-32. They just lost two games to the two worst teams in basketball. In the Bucks and the Kings. And they have issues. They have issues. Here's what scares me. Here's what scares me about the Knicks a lot. Well, I mean, you all know, but I was thinking about this last night. The Knicks make a lot of really good small moves. Their small moves are really good. You know, picking up Pablo Prigioni or Chris Copeland or, you know, of course, Jeremy Lin. Picking up those guys. Jeremy Tyler, they're D-League guys. They make those decisions. They've drafted well. Later in the first round, Tim Hardaway Jr., Iman Shumpert, they've made those decisions well, which tells me that their basketball people have done a pretty good job overall, right? Their scouts must be doing something right. Their behind-the-scenes staff must be doing something right. But when it comes to any big-picture thing, they've been an absolute mess. Like, an indescribable mess. So what does that say to you? If the basketball people are doing the small things right, but all the big things go horribly, horribly wrong, to me that says that the small things upper management and the owner are not worried about, right? I mean, do you think Jim Dolan cares if Jeremy Tyler is signed off the D-League team? Well, maybe he did because they gave Chris Smith a roster spot. That's another story. But you know Jim Dolan cares about Carmelo Anthony's future. And you know he cares about probably what they're going to do at the trade deadline coming up. And as an NBA fan, a basketball fan who does a show in New York, I am not only afraid, I am almost certain the Knicks are going to do the wrong things. And they're going to put themselves right back on that road to nowhere. That they're going to tie all of their assets up where the next draft pick that they'll have will have to be used on Tim Hardaway Jr., where they will do whatever is in their power to sign Carmelo Anthony to a supermax contract that ties up their entire salary cap, that they'll go star chasing again and sell their fans on waiting for another summer, another, you know, like 2015 is magical. A magical land of roses and butterflies and puppies. When you get to 2015, all of the players will come to the Knicks. All of the magical players. I mean, some of the names thrown out there, Kevin Love and Melo are redundant together. Rondo is coming off an ACL injury. I mean, these guys, they can't be had in trade, so you have to wait till they're free agents. And who's to say they want to come to the Knicks? Would you want to come to the Knicks if you were a free agent? Aside from New York, the only sell is New York. And besides, if they sign Carmelo to a supermax deal, they might not have room for another max player in 2015. How mad will you be if they get to 2015 and they don't have room for another max player? On top of that, I'm not even sure that's the best way to build around Carmelo. You know, the best way to build around Carmelo, I think, is you need a center who, ideally, Tyson Chandler in his absolute prime, not Tyson Chandler from this year, but someone of that who's going to run the floor, protect the rim, play defense, just be an option to finish, not need to be a post player. You need shooters and two-way players, guys who are going to cover up some defensive deficiencies, and probably a point guard he respects. You know, the model of like the 2011 Mavericks sort of team. But they don't have the assets to pull that off either. I mean, Steve Mills is really under some pressure here. Steve Mills has a clean slate as far as I'm concerned. He has a clean slate because he hasn't done it. I mean, I'm not going to hold the Isaiah thing against him. But the problem is, I don't believe that Steve Mills is the GM. I don't believe Steve Mills has the power to make these moves. So, with all that said, here's what I'm starting to wonder. Because you know they're not going to trade Carmelo Anthony. I said to blow this up in November. You can check the tape. In November. I saw this coming. But they ain't doing that. We all know it. So, if you're not going to trade off and acquire assets, and you're just going to chase the golden goose, and then you're going to put Carmelo on this contract, because Carmelo, guys, is having the best season of his career. And the Knicks are 20-32. He's having the best season of his career. And the Knicks are 20-32. I'm real scared of his next contract. The next 5 years, when he's more likely to decline than get better. More likely to decline than get better. And his contract alone will eat up, I think, at least 40% of the salary cap, maybe more. You know what I'm starting to think? I'll tell you what I'm starting to think. Coming up next, Robin Lundberg Show, ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show podcast. Hear the Robin Lundberg Show weekdays from 4 to 6 a.m. on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM and ESPNNewYork.com.
You want to hear a ringing endorsement for Knicks head coach Mike Woodson? Hey, Carmelo Anthony, what do you think of New York Knicks head coach Mike Woodson?
He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
Did you hear what Melo said on head coach Mike Woodson?
He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
One more time.
He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
I mean, come on, man. That's what we're dealing with, the New York Knicks. They're still here, and that's what we're dealing with. I wish they didn't come back from the All-Star break. They just went away. That's it. Poof, gone. The Knicks are gone. I mean, and they've been driving me crazy as a non-fan all year. They've been driving, not even like someone who grew up as a fan. The pain and suffering you must feel. The pain.
I kind of had like a random blow up. Like I went on like a 20-minute rant about I don't even know what, and I don't know why I was mad, but I think that's why.
I get so mad sometimes, man. Like, how can you do it? How? Here's what I said in November.
How do you really build up what the fans deserve? Really build up a championship-level team? You got to clear it all out. You got to blow it up. Take the dynamite to it and build it from the foundation. Put the blocks down and then piece it together one by one.
But you know they're never going to do the right thing. As a fan, you know they're never going to do the right thing. It is like rooting for Wile E. Coyote. It really is. It's like a comedy sketch. It's like a cartoon. It's sad. It's funny. I mean, the only way to properly deal with it at one point just has to be humor. It's the only way to cope with something like this. If you truly care about it, it's like, all right, here it comes. What first round are we trading next? Who are we trading away? What asset? What guy are we chasing? Who's the next savior of the franchise? Come on down. Rajon Rondo, come on down. You're the next savior of the New York Knicks. Do it the right way. How do they not learn? How does James Dolan not learn? What he's doing is wrong. He knew enough to build a beautiful building. Madison Square Garden is glorious. All the celebrities get to sit in it and look nice. And then the Kings beat them, the Knicks. And they just run the ugliest plays down the stretch of the game I've ever seen. Here's what I'm starting to think. I'm starting to think the Knicks need Carmelo Anthony to walk to save them from themselves. Again. The Knicks might need Carmelo Anthony to walk to save them from themselves. Because I don't trust them to build the proper team around Carmelo. I don't trust them to do anything but star chase. They could get left up empty-handed. I don't trust Carmelo Anthony's five-year new full max contract. He's having the best year of his career, and they are a disgrace. Do you trust that? I don't. Five-year deal? You know, making like $29 million in year four and five? Eating up 40, 50% of the cap, whatever it might be? As he's in his 30 to 35 years? I don't trust that. At least if he walks, you're guaranteed to be awful. You're guaranteed to be awful. The Knicks, crazy, crazy news, guys. They actually have a first-round pick in 2015. They actually have one. So he walks. They're terrible. They've got their first-round pick. And everybody's contract expires. Oh, I mean, that sentence I just uttered. Think about that. They might need Carmelo to walk to save them from themselves. In the meantime, they've got head coach Mike Woodson.
He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
1-800-919-3776. 1-800-919-3776. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. Ron in Baltimore.
Robin, I hate them all. Trade all of them. Fire Woody. Let's let management make mistakes on new players. Robin, you saw Jimmer Fredette last night. He looked like Michael Jordan. Okay, you read the stat about Melo's 0 for 12 in walk-off shots. How many of those attempts have been with Mike Woodson as head coach, Robin?
In the last 2 years, it's got to be nearly all of them.
Yes. So basically, he has to do it on his own. He's playing the whole damn game. He's worn out. And
yeah, I mean, his minutes are so far up there.
Robin, it's going to ruin the rest of his career the way Woody's using him. And I love Woody's excuse for not playing Meta. Well, he hasn't played lately. That's your problem, Woody. Okay, I'm going to get an oil massage this weekend, Robin. I'm miserable. Okay, I just want new players. I need a cleansing of my soul, Robin. I love you. You have a good weekend.
I'm not even going to ask a follow-up question. I wanted to ask Ron a follow-up question about his choice of relaxation techniques, but I'm scared of what the answer may be. Is the answer for the Knicks just that Carmelo Anthony should walk to save them from themselves? 1-800-919-3776. Jim in Syracuse. I'm expecting Jim is fond of Carmelo, of course.
Oh, no, absolutely. Carmelo needs to walk. It's the best thing for the Knicks organization. In 2015, like you said, we're going to have four contracts on the books. It's going to be J.R. Smith, Pablo Prigioni, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Raymond So. And that's going to go down from $91 million to $12 million. That's a lot of spending cap, and there's one big free agent that the Warriors can't pay, and that's going to be Klay Thompson. And he has superstar status, and you know what?
Well, I disagree with you. I mean, I agree with most of your points. I do not think, Jim, that Klay Thompson has superstar status. I don't think he's that level of player. He's not even having that good a season this year. But, you know, I appreciate the sentiment, and you're right about all the contracts coming off the books. I mean, Klay Thompson is – I would be stunned if he developed into a superstar. Stunned. I mean, his player efficiency rating is below league average this year, shooting 43% from the floor. He's still a good three-point shooter. He could score. I mean, he's a good player. But he's not anywhere near the guy you're saying, oh, we need a superstar around. Barry in the car. Hey, Barry.
Hey, what's going on, Robin?
What's up, man?
I've been seeing this morning trade rumors between the Bulls and the Knicks. Shumpert, Felton, and Carmelo for Kurt Heinrich, Carlos Boozer, Tony Snell, Jimmy Buckets.
You know, Barry, let me stop round. You right there. I've seen the same thing, but I saw the source. It's not real. So
I'm a Bulls fan, so I hope it's not real.
Okay. I mean, if we had they're not going to trade Carmelo. You know, like, I already, that ship sailed. You know, I'm starting to get frustrated again. I'm sorry. I mean, let me take a second. I just got to figure out what I'm dealing with.
He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
All right. Well, you know, the thing is, they're not going to trade him, Barry. We know that. They're not going to trade him. So they're not going to get the assets back. They're not going to cash in on their return. That's what I think would probably be the prudent move. It'd probably be the best move for both teams. But the mm-hmm. Bulls rumor, I know which one you're talking about, but if you go back and check the source on that, today's day and age, people will just run with anything that gets put out there. There's not actually like a reputable, I think, thing behind that. I know the Bulls have been brought up as a possible destination because people are looking for a desirable location. So instead of hoping that the Knicks might consider trading Carmelo Anthony, at least, I've now gone to hoping maybe he'll just leave them so that they, you know, can't make the wrong decisions. It might be the better long-term thing for them. I think it is. That might be. I'm assuming right now it's the better long-term thing for them. As crazy as that sounds. But you really can't trust them to do anything right. Like, it has to be forced on them. They need to hit rock bottom. Well, they've already hit rock bottom, and they like it there. They like to hang out at rock bottom. It's their place. It's their spot. Sal in Queens. Hey, Sal.
Rockin' Robin. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, what's up, Sal? Long time no hear.
Yeah, it's good talking. It's been too long. I'll make sure I call more frequently. Now, a couple of things. Yeah, I always hear you can't rebuild in New York. This isn't working now.
That's garbage. You can't rebuild in New York. It only enables bad management.
Exactly. Yes. Now, here's what I would do. I would try to trade as many guys and get as many first-round picks as possible. Because every time I hear, we're going to trade a first-round pick, enough with the trading of the first-round picks. Enough of it. If you can trade Carmelo Anthony and get a first-round pick, fine. If he's going to walk into the season, fine. Just get first-round picks. Don't trade any more first-round picks. I'm tired of hearing that. They lost to the Kings yesterday.
Well, Sal, think about this. How beloved is Tim Hardaway Jr.? How much did fans hype up Iman Shumpert? That shows you can rebuild. I'm not even saying around those guys. It's how excited fans get about young players. Fans love to take ownership of that. They love to see something grow. What's working now isn't working. I mean, I don't even know how I phrase that, but it definitely ain't working. Whatever's going on now.
And in closing, Rob, I just want to say, my name is Sal, and I've been a New York Knicks fan since 1981, and I'll be a New York Knicks fan for as long as I'm an NBA fan. But this is garbage. It's garbage, Robin. I just want to see one. I want to see a good team. The championship is like unrealistic. Just give me a good team.
You know what, Sal? It's not just garbage, Sal. It's garbage that's been left on the corner and not picked up for 15 years. That's what it is. It's rancid old garbage. Troy in the car. Hey, Troy.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
You know, man, my uncle got me some tickets when I was 16 years old, man. And I attended that game when Bernard King hit 60 points. I was 16 years old, man. And I've been a Knicks fan ever since. My problem with the Knicks are it starts from the top. James Dolan, to me, and I'm sorry, he's the worst owner ever. How do you let Pat Riley walk? How do you let Donnie Walsh walk? How do you let Pat Riley, all those guys, all those basketball geniuses, Larry Brown, he still couldn't get it right then. I don't know what's going to help the Knicks. I don't, you know, I'm just so frustrated. You know what I mean? And listen, you got Clyde announcing games. Why is he not a part of the coaching staff? Where's Patrick Ewing? Where's Charles Oakley? Where is Vanilla King, shooting coach? Why can't he be a freaking shooting coach?
Well, I mean, these guys don't have to be part of the organization, but I totally understand your frustration, Troy. I mean, I don't think they have to bring everybody back, but I get what you're where you're coming from. Tim in Queens. Tim, you're on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.
You know what we need to do?
What's
we
that?
We need to get cap space in 2015 and trade James Dolan for Michael Jordan, put him in a uniform, and boom, that's all I need to say right there.
Would you rather have James Dolan or Michael Jordan run your team? That's a conundrum to be in. Brett in Manhattan. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Robin. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, used to be a Knicks fan. Matter of fact, I stopped liking him after I bought a Starks jersey before Game 7, and he went out and shot, I think, what was it, 2-for-18?
Oh, yeah, but that's not a good reason not to like them. I mean, that was just a guy having a bad game. That's not the organizational issues. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's not why. No. It was because Ewing and everyone making guarantees all the time, every year, and always coming up short. So just it is just an absolute joke. And with Carmelo, he is a great scorer, does not make one player around him better at all. And I just love watching this disaster happen.
You know, the only way, Brett, for Carmelo Anthony maybe to make others around him better is to walk out the door. Is to walk out the door and save the Knicks from themselves. I don't think he's saving his coach's job.
He's still here, and that's what we're dealing with.
We'll ask Brian Windhorst about that next. Robin Lundberg Show, ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show podcast. Hear the Robin Lundberg Show weekdays from 4 to 6 a.m. on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM and ESPNNewYork.com.
That's how I felt. Like he's singing right there. That's how I felt watching the Heat and the Warriors last night. I mean, when I watch a game like the Heat and the Warriors, I got to confess this to Brian Windhorst, who joins me now, ESPN.com NBA writer. Brian, I feel like I'm getting away with something. Like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. It's like, well, this game is awesome. Look at Steph Curry get to the basket. Look at LeBron hit the game-winning three. A Mount Rushmore-type shot. And I'm looking around to see if somebody's going to catch me watching it. Like I'm doing something wrong. Like, I'm getting away with something.
What I think was amazing, and then I'll just say, obviously, the Warriors have some of the best fans in the NBA, very loyal, very loud. But as they were coming out of the Oracle Arena, they were smiling. Their team had just been beat by a devastating shot, but they were smiling, and they were reenacting, you know, the shot, the LeBron step back, because they realized that they had just seen something that they're going to be telling in stories about for a long time. And, you know, if you want to debate who's on Mount Rushmore, you want to debate, you know, who your all-time starting five is and things like that, that's fine. But when a guy can do that, when a guy can hit a shot like that and leave you smiling at the end of it because you know, just like Jordan did and Kobe's done and things like that, that sort of tells you where LeBron is and what sort of performance he puts forward.
And great timing for him to do it. And he seems like he's rounding into form. Not like he's had a bad season. He's had a heck of a season. But he seems to be moving faster to me. And either he's feeling better health-wise or he's got that internal clock and says, all right, it's almost go time.
Yeah, I think he's really played well for the last 3-4 weeks. That Durant hot streak that he had really, I think, fired LeBron up. And he did have an absolute dud game over the weekend in Salt Lake City. Probably played his worst game of the year. And he responded with two games the last couple nights in Phoenix and here in Golden State where he just was great. 37 points against the Suns with 9 rebounds. Almost a triple-double tonight against the Warriors. You know, it's been easy to overlook what he's been doing because Durant's been so fantastic. But he has been every bit his MVP self, really, from mid-January on.
Now, moving on to the Knicks, unfortunately. Brian, I know you always have great sources in your articles. I have a source as well that tells me that Mike Woodson's clipboard is, in fact, a whole bunch of arrows pointing at Carmelo Anthony. I mean,
you know, look, I didn't, you know, I was at the Heat Warriors game tonight, so I just know what I saw in the box score. And but you could almost look at that box score as to any game they've played this year. Carmelo played, it looked to me, pretty well, but he didn't get enough support, and they couldn't make the plays to win. On one hand, you witness one of the game of Jimmer Fredette's life, and so you chalk that up, but at some point, you keep losing these types of games, and, you know, it just becomes beyond frustrating. And the things that the Knicks did so well last year are just totally gone, including their team-wide balance, and it's got to be beyond frustrating for them.
I mean, it's just so predictable. Everybody in the building knows what's coming down the stretch of games. Robin Lundberg talking to Brian Windhorst, of course, NBA writer for ESPN.com. Do you think they are going to make a move on the head coach?
You know, I keep hearing no for various reasons that all make sense, but the pressure is mounting. You take a look at what their schedule is when they get back from the break. It's not good. It's a lot of road games and a lot of games. I don't think they have a very good chance to win. I don't know if you do it now because, you know, even if you did it now, the guy you'd be putting in there isn't in a position to be successful. I really don't think an interim helps the Knicks, but I'm sure it would make people feel better. I don't think that's the root of what their problem is. I mean, obviously, his pick-and-roll defense is under fire. You look at those statistics with Melo taking the last shot this year and last year, and you just scratch your mind on the lack of creativity. And those are things that are going to be pointed to when Woodson gets fired. He's going to get fired. Everybody knows it. But you have to ask yourself whether this will help or hurt the team. You never know. I'm not a guy who believes in interim coaches. I think generally they don't do well. Woodson, when he did that a couple years ago, D'Antoni was an outlier. That's not something that usually happens. And that's the feel that I've got from people with the Knicks organization, that they don't favor that. But, you know, you go look at a team like the Cavs, for example, they make a change to their general manager, which you wouldn't think would do anything on the court, and they rip off a four-game win streak because the shakeup causes an attitude adjustment. So that's what I think that, you know, Jim Dolan's probably weighing. He probably doesn't think it's the best move, but I think he realizes that, it may be something just that you need to do to shake up the team.
You know, Brian, it's starting to scare me on what this team is going to do in the big picture, because you're right. I believe Mike Woodson deserves to be fired given the job he's done this year, but it's treating the symptoms and not the disease. But if you look across the board at all the Knicks' small moves, they've all been very good. You know, the European signings, whether it was Copeland or Prigioni, the guys they've picked up off of the D-League or waiver wires, Novak, Jeremy Lin, Jeremy Tyler, you know, all those things have worked out. It's always the lack of the big picture sense that gets them, which makes me think there is interference with the general managers and the coaches on down from above. And I am just afraid, as someone who loves basketball, as someone who loves the NBA and does a talk show here in New York, that they are just going to totally, totally handcuff themselves for the next 5 years again, something like that.
Yeah, the Shumpert and Hardaway draft picks, you know, considering where they drafted them, you know, pretty good picks too, so add to that. Here's the thing. So Carmelo Anthony, everybody's sort of concerned about him walking. I think what you just brought up is the opposite end of the spectrum. What if they re-sign Carmelo and have a team that's mediocre, that's paying Carmelo Anthony $27, $28 million a year when he's 33, 34 years old? The Knicks are going to hold on to him. I mean, this is sort of a point off for him. The max, and, you know, he's probably going to take it. But to be honest with you, you know, you could create a case where Carmelo walking in free agency
is the way they save them from themselves.
Yeah, and actually, even better than that, Carmelo asking for a sign and trade where you could get something back for him, and then have your cap clear in 2015 where there's a whole bunch of really good free agents. You know, I don't necessarily think that's a foolproof way, because the Knicks tried to clear their cap back in 2010 and they ended up with this. But looking at what they have now, I mean, like I said, I could sit there with a dry erase board and create a case for somebody and say that this is a vision, and it might make more sense than the vision of re-signing Carmelo Anthony to that kind of money when he's you know, frankly, he's a really enjoyable guy to watch. He fills the garden. It's fun to watch him. But, you know, he's 30 years old. He's not a difference-making player. And, you know, he may realize that, too. He may realize he needs to go someplace where he's with a difference-making player to have really maximum success. And, you know, that's really what this season, more than anything, has maybe shown everybody in the league.
And when you look around All-Star Weekend, there tends to be a storyline that is a subplot. Do you think that is going to be it this year?
I mean, I'm sure there will be people who are talking about possibly trading him or something like that. I mean, there's just the Knicks aren't going to trade him. There's just no way.
I know. It's so, like, I might as well bang my head against the microphone instead of saying that into it.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, when the Knicks look at their competition for him, I don't think the Lakers and the Bulls would have to rip their team apart. And the Lakers, I don't think, are really that more attractive. So, you know, I don't think the Knicks are even staying up nights worrying about it, you know. I'm sure it'll be talked about, but I just don't think it's a realistic option.
Meanwhile, Knicks fans might get a brief respite from what they've watched all season, just this disaster of a year with the stars out there. I mean, I always enjoy All-Star Weekend. I never get, Brian, why people complain about stuff like that. You know what it is going in, and you get to see the likes of Kevin Durant and LeBron James. And I think that still might be an MVP race and still might be a very likely finals matchup, too, by the time this all winds up.
Yeah, that's what you're going to be hearing the next couple of days, is LeBron coming back with several huge games. They play each other again next Thursday, too. So that should be interesting. But I'm looking forward to, look, Damian Lillard playing in all five events over the weekend. That'll be kind of cool, you know. That's never happened before. And, you know, there's some guys in this game that, you know, Stephen Curry was just out. Stephen Curry was so awesome tonight, and he made a couple of tremendous plays in the fourth quarter, including this hesitation, step back, stop and go. I don't know what you'd call it. The three-point play where he
burned Chalmers.
Yep. He turned Chalmers into a pretzel. I mean, in that game, that play is just lost to history now because LeBron beats him 14 seconds later. But, you know, come on. Go watch Damian Lillard, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant. I mean, there's a lot to like with some of the newer guys in the league, with some of the older guys, you know, taking a step back now.
Well, no reason for you to put your writing in a skills competition, because it's always a slam dunk. You see what I did there, Brian? Brian Windhorst.
What a professional.
NBA writer for ESPN.com. Thanks, as always, for the time, man.
Okay, take care, Lumber.
There was something else that's going to make Knicks fans mad that happened last night. At the same time as the Knicks game, basically, in the Wizards-Rockets games, and I tweeted it out last night. You know what? I'll tweet it back out right now so you can see it. You just got to follow me on Twitter. If you already do, it's the tweet I just sent out, at Robin Lundberg, RobinLundberg, so you can see it for yourself. But in overtime, during one of the huddles, Raymond Felton, who has a nice career ahead of him as a practice cone because he can't guard anyone, he was in the huddle and he's yawning. Like, you see him yawning. I don't know if that's a nervous reflex or anything, but the dude is yawning. At the same time, in the Rockets-Wizards game, and I just bring this up because of these two guys and the comparison and the switch that was kind of pulled, Jeremy Lin takes the pen from head coach Kevin McHale and draws up the final play that winds up being the game winner. James Harden hit the game winner against the Wizards last night. So it's just such a contrast, and it's very funny to see. Just check out my Twitter account. I put them both up there in GIF or GIF form, whatever you call that GIF thing. But at Robin Lundberg on Twitter, you can see Raymond Felton yawning in the middle of Mike Woodson's huddle. And I'll defend Felton a little bit here because he probably knew, yeah, Melo's getting the ball. We all know we're going to stand to the side and Melo's going to shoot. And then at the contrast, you've got Lin literally drawing up the final play as the Rockets win the game.
Thanks for listening to the Robin Lundberg Show podcast. Hear the Robin Lundberg Show weekdays from 4 to 6 a.m. on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM and ESPNNewYork.com.